So cloud concepts. So cloud computing is a model for enabling convenient on-demand network access to shared pool of computing resources that could be rapidly provisioned and released with minimal efforts or the service provider interaction. So the cloud model consists of five different characteristics. There are three different service models. So these are infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. And then there are four different deployment models. So these are the public cloud, private cloud, hybrid cloud, and the community cloud. So let us look at them in more details. So essential characteristics of a cloud service. So first is the on-demand service. So what do I mean by on-demand? So as I said, as a consumer or as an enterprise, if I have to provision resources on the fly, basis my demand, basis my workload, I could do that. So that is an on-demand model. I would take an example of a generics company. So these are companies who have, say, a lot of compute instances running to actually, you know, work on big data applications. So just to, you know, clarify things a bit. So say, for example, if there are a lot of applications which want to harness the power of big data, then I need to run a lot of compute instances, so servers for that matter. So I need to run a lot of servers so that I can process the big data. Now, what do I do is that basis the time, I could provision resources on the cloud, that is, I could provision compute instances on the cloud, and basis the cost on the cloud, I could basically, you know, provision them faster. That is on demand. So say if I have a requirement to provision them, then I could do that vis-a-vis having them on premise. That means running them all the time, provisioning them, and so on. So it's basically a on-demand self-service. So consumer can provision compute capabilities such as the server time, the network storage as needed, without having a human interaction. So you would have a self-service portal. So Amazon calls it the web portal, through which you can actually provision these services. So you can provision it themselves, and you could do it on the fly. So basis your time, you could provision them or you could deprovision them. So suppose if I have a compute instance that I'm running, say for, I just need to run it for 2 hours, and after that I stop it. So I can do that, right? So that's the power. The second is the broad network access. So as we said, to access the cloud applications, I need to have a robust internet connectivity, a good speed, and I could the internet connectivity or the private connectivity, which could be a MPLS or a direct connect. So I can basically access my service through either the internet or the private connectivity. So I can have a broad range of network access only through this two connectivity medium, right? So it gives me a lot of flexibility vis-a-vis everything which is hosted on premise. The third concept is resource pooling. So what do I mean by resource pooling is that a lot of resources can be clubbed together, right? So the service providers' computing resources are pooled to service multiple customers. So we just spoke about the concept a few minutes back. What is it called? Yeah, it's called multi-tenancy. So using a multi-tenanted model with different physical and virtual resources, they could be dynamically assigned and aligned as per the customer demand. Now, when we talk about multi-tenancy, again, just keep in mind the virtualization. So virtualization is the basic platform through which multi-tenancy could be given. And when we talk about multi-tenancy, the security framework also come into picture. So very strong security mechanisms also have to be in picture when we talk about multi-tenanted architecture. So there is a sense of location independence in that the customer generally has no control or no knowledge over the exact location of the provided resources and may be able to specify the locations at a high level of abstraction. So what does this mean? See, from a customer perspective, and I'll give you a real life example. Say if I have to architect a workload in the AWS environment. So AWS gives me Mumbai region, it gives me say Singapore region, it gives me US East region, it gives me US West region. But then I do not know where does my compute instance reside? So in Mumbai, it could be anywhere, right? So from a customer perspective, I do not know where does it reside. But then, yes, at a high level, I know that, say, for example, if I've chosen Mumbai, that means the instance is located in Mumbai or probably somewhere nearby, so that I could then devise my applications accordingly for my users to get the application response times. So say, for example, if I have a application which is hosted in US East Coast, right, then the time it takes for a consumer who is based in India to access US East Coast, it could be in the range of, say, 200 milliseconds. That is the internet latency, the time it takes for a packet from India to reach US East Coast through the undersea cables, vis-a-vis application which is hosted in Mumbai, for which a customer might take a latency of less than 20 milliseconds, right? So basis that I could devise my entire architecture. So resource pooling as a concept, it is having a multi-tenanted architecture where I could have a lot of resources on a single physical host, and using the power of virtualization, it is possible to do that, and ensuring that the proper security frameworks are in place. The third concept is about elasticity. Now, I briefly spoke about auto-scaling. So what does elasticity give me? So capabilities can be rapidly and elastically provisioned, and in many cases automatically rapidly scaled up, or it could be scaled down as well. So these are two concepts involved. So during peak load, it has to be scaled up, and when the traffic decreases, it has to be intelligent enough to scale down. So there is something called as auto-scaling. Now there are two types of auto-scaling. So one is either resources can be scaled horizontally or resources could be scaled vertically. What does this mean? And these are two very popular terms in the industry that you would hear. When we talk about horizontal scaling, that means, say if I have one compute server, I would add one more, or two, I would add one more, so that it scales horizontally. Vis-a-vis a vertical scaling, so say for example, if I have say a 36 core processor, then adding a few more cores in the vertical in the same server, adding higher amount of storage in the same server, so that is vertical scaling, right? So the cloud as a model, it's very elastic in nature. So it could enable you to scale your resources either vertically or horizontally. So to the customers, the capabilities available for provisioning, they often appear to be quite unlimited, because I could have n number of instances which are scaled horizontally, right? So that's the power of auto scaling. Last is the measured service. Now we said that cloud is very good. It could provide pay per use or usage based services, or say in case of say some of the storage service, it could be, you know, time based services. But then it also offers a very robust reporting platform, and it offers a very good measured service. So what do I mean by that? So say if I'm using a Amazon service to provide a cloud based storage, then I could actually measure the time for which I've accessed that, or I could measure how many times has the data been taken out, what is the amount of data that has been taken out. So it provides a very good reporting and management framework as such. So the cloud systems automatically control and optimize use by leveraging a metering capability at some level of abstraction appropriate to the type of service. So it provides a very good mechanism, plus it provides a very good audit mechanism as well. So if I have proper identity mechanisms in place, so identity access management is the right term for it. So if I have the right identity access management in place, and if I have audit mechanisms in place, then I can actually fetch a report of who has actually downloaded that particular storage data, when he has downloaded, what is the amount of data that he has downloaded. So all the audit trail can be captured from there. So going ahead, depending on the organization's requirement, different technologies and configurations could be appropriate basis their specific needs. To understand which part of the spectrum of cloud system is more appropriate for a given need, so the organization should consider how cloud has to be deployed, what kind of services need to be provided to their customers, what are the opportunity and risks of using the cloud service, and the technical aspects of the cloud service. So say for example, something like a performance, So I gave the classic example of deploying an application in the US East Coast versus deploying anything which is in the Mumbai region. The reliability, how reliable is the offering, and the terms and conditions and the SLAs that a typical cloud provider would give. So all these things should be taken into account. So a cloud computing system must be deployed privately. So it could be either private to the company, so it's called as a private cloud, or it could be hosted on a cloud provider, so it could be on a public cloud, or it could be shared amongst a few partners. So say that is the classic case of a community cloud, and we will discuss them in more detail. Or it could be hosted by a third party. So say if I have a third party who hosts my data center, right? Now understand this. So at the basic level, I have all the storage, the compute, everything on premise. So that is my specific on premise. If I have everything that is deployed in a third party, right? So that is a third party cloud, but that is still private to me, right? So that is still a private cloud. If I have everything deployed on the cloud, that is a public cloud, so that is a public cloud offering. If this particular offering is shared between a couple of players, then that is a community cloud offering. If I have some of my workloads into the private cloud, it could be either on-premise or with a third party vendor, and a part of my workloads are into the public cloud, then this particular offering of the public cloud and the private cloud becomes a hybrid cloud for me. So all these things are possible in case of a cloud deployment. In an outsourced and public deployment model, cloud computing provides the convenient rental of computing resources. So something like paper service, whatever service that I use, say for example, if I use S3, which is a storage service by AWS, then I only pay as per my usage and not pay for the generic service as such. So while a service, so I need not pay upfront acquisition cost to build an entire infrastructure on-premise or in my public cloud. Cloud computing generally favors applications that could be broken down into independent parts. Cloud systems generally depend on networking, and hence limitation on networking, things like data import export, bottlenecks, service disruptions. So these are some of the things. So yes, it is very critical for an organization to know that what all applications could be deployed on the cloud. So it's not that everything could be deployed on the cloud. There also could be some government regulations. So say in case of the banks, right, the banking regulations say that you could not have the core applications could deployed on a public cloud. So they have to be hosted on a private cloud or on a on-premise model, right? So there are certain rules and regulations. And there are certain applications which support only a private cloud or an on-premise deployment vis-a-vis a cloud or a public cloud deployment. So this has to be taken care of. In case of complex network systems, so cloud are affected by the traditional computer and network security. So again, if you have some legacy applications in place which do not support say virtualization or which do not support a cloud model, then they have to be left as it is because they are siloed applications, but nonetheless they are critical to the business. So you have to keep them separate, treat them separate, right? So that's the siloed or say a very specific application which has to be dealt separately. So inherently, the move to cloud computing is a business decision in which the business case has to be considered with the relevant factors, some of which could be the readiness of the existing application that we spoke about, transition to the cloud, the migration costs that are involved if a workload has to be migrated in the cloud, the maturity of the service, so how good is the organization in handling the new technologies, the new cloud technologies vis-a-vis the on-premise technologies. So all these factors have to be taken into account when a decision is made. So let us now look at the components that are involved in cloud computing. So the typical components that are involved in cloud computing, so they include obviously the data center, because that's where the entire business intelligence lies. Then you have the servers, you have the clients, and then there is the entire infrastructure in place. So let us understand each of these in more details. So let us start with the end user. So the clients are basically the end users or the consumers of that particular cloud offering. So the clients very much are the same, right? So if I have to talk about a cloud-based model versus a traditional model, the clients would remain the same. And the devices through which they access are also the same. So they could access it through a standard LAN, which is a local area network, or through a WAN, which is a wide area network. So that is across the internet or across other networks. It could be across the MPLS network, right? So, and they could access from the laptops, desktops, mobile phones, right? So clients are basically the end consumers of the service. And clients could also be, say, for example, thin client. So say if I have virtual desktops in place, then I could have a thin client, which is basically just getting that intelligence from a central source. So in case of a thin client, which is a VDI or a virtual desktop, in this case, the entire compute is centralized, whereas there is only a small interface which is localized. So you could just understand this, that the local desktop is that becomes just a dumb device. So you would see this very popularly in a bank. So say if you go to a bank, say for example ICICI Bank, so in place of the CPU you would see a very small devices the shape of a hard disk, and these are the local intelligent devices. So these are the thin clients, whereas the entire storage or the entire compute lies centrally. So that's again one more client to access the data. The other component is the data center, and data center, as I said, is the heart of every IT infrastructure. So data center would host all the servers, the web, app, DB, it could host the storage, it would host the security, everything. So, and all your enterprise applications, be it ERP or any other business critical applications, are hosted in the data center. So data center is the heart of every organization. So data center is a centralized location where all the storage devices and the servers require to execute the applications are located. Large organizations would have multiple data centers, primary data center, backup, etc. Now, what is the need for primary and backup? Just redundancy, right? So, say in case of a bank, if I have a primary data center which is located in region X, and if there is an earthquake or there is a power outage or anything, if there is a flood or whatever, natural calamity, then how do I keep my business running? So if I have multiple data centers which are active, then I could service my load through the other data center, or I could service my load through a disaster recovery center, which is a backup, right? So from an organization perspective, I need to have multiple different data centers so as to keep my business running. Another data center concept we already spoke about, that is server virtualization. So again, you have a hypervisor layer on your physical server which helps to create lot of virtual machines, so basically that provides multiple instances of the virtual servers. The third component are the distributed servers. So servers, again, they are part of the data center. So organizations would have multiple data centers, as we spoke about. Some organizations would have multiple data centers and some disaster recovery centers. Some would just have a DC and a DR. Some would have a DC, a DR, and something called as a NDR, that is a near DR. Again, basis the nature of the business and the criticality of the data. So large organizations typically have multiple primary and disaster recovery sites, as I just mentioned. The cloud services use multiple geographically different servers to improve the responses. Now, let us take an example of Google.com, right? Now, Google typically has a lot of servers which are placed around the world. So say a customer who is based in India does not access the Google server which is based in USA, because it does not make sense, correct? So if you see, if you type google.com, it redirects to google.in. And suppose if you type, say, if you are in another country, say for example Singapore, then Google will redirect to google.sg. So that's a Google server which is based in Singapore vis-a-vis a Google server which is based in India. So that is getting the information which is closer to the customer, reducing the latency or the time it takes to access that. So the point I'm driving is that basis the model, customers would have multiple different distributed servers in different parts of the globe so as to have a faster response time for the customers. So Google and Amazon have data centers and servers across the world. Increase of hardware will be based on the requirement for each of the site, as you just mentioned. The last point is the infrastructure. So cloud computing is not a one site which one size that fits all, right? So even in case of a cloud offering, it has to be architected as per the needs of the organization. So it's not like saying that, okay, so say if I've taken the cloud, I get everything. No, it doesn't work that way. So just in case of an on-premise deployment, so say if I'm a small enterprise, then I would just need, say, one router, one or two web servers, one or two application servers, and one database server. So what I've done is that I've architected this solution on-premise. But then if I have to move this thing on the cloud, then similarly I have to architect this on the cloud. But then the cloud takes care of the provisioning, the auto scaling that we spoke about, right? But then I still have to architect it. So what this particular slide talks about is that the cloud service provider configures the infrastructure depending upon the applications required or offered, and the architecture of the cloud deployment. So it basically provides the provisioning, but then there has to be someone who has to architect that particular solution. So the cloud can satisfy a small enterprise and also a large enterprise. The infrastructure dynamically is configured to meet the computing requirements and application required and the type of service and the offers that could be bundled around. So the offering or the architecture could be different for a small enterprise vis-a-vis a large enterprise. So having looked at the different components of cloud computing, let us understand the deployment models, right? So essentially the cloud deployment can be classified into basically three different types. So as I have said, this could be a public cloud or a private cloud, or it could be a combination of public and private, which is a hybrid cloud. And the fourth type is the community cloud. So let us start with the public cloud. So a public cloud can be accessed by a subscriber with a internet connection or a private connection, that is a MPLS connection. It could be owned, managed and operated by a business or a government or any enterprise, and it exists on the premise of a cloud provider. Now give me an example of a public cloud. So AWS or Google Cloud or Microsoft Azure. So these are examples of the public cloud. So what do they provide? They provide compute, infrastructure, everything on their particular cloud, which could be accessed from anywhere. Because it is accessed from anywhere, it is termed as a public cloud. It could host infrastructures for many different customers, right? So it's public in nature. Any customer can access their particular data, right? Because there are security mechanisms in place where customer A cannot access data of customer B. Right, so there are securities in place, but then this as a concept, it's basically open to the public. Although there are data segregation in place, multi-tenanted architectures in place and proper frameworks in place, but then as a concept, it's still open to the public, and that is why it is called as a public cloud. The second is the private cloud. Now private cloud is specific to a particular organization. Now say if I have all my data center, compute, the web, app, DB, everything that is on-premise, I would classify this as a private cloud. If this particular offering is, say, stored with some vendor, some service provider, right, then it becomes a co-location or it becomes a private cloud which is hosted by a player. So private cloud is established for a single or a specific group or organization and limits access only to that specific group. So public cloud, we said it is open to the public. Private cloud, it is meant only for that particular organization. It would be owned and managed by that particular organization, a third party. So in case if you appoint a third party to manage it, or a combination of both may exist. So it could be either on-premise or off-premise. The third is the community cloud. Now, community cloud is shared amongst many organizations. So it could be owned, managed, and operated by one or more organizations. So again, so this might be a little confusing. So what exactly is a community cloud? So community cloud is between a private cloud and a public cloud. So it doesn't take both of them. So say for example, if I have to deploy banking as an application. Now there are certain providers which provide entire ecosystem of bank as a part of the community cloud. So all the ecosystem is provided as a part of that particular cloud offering, and that is a community cloud. So things like bank as a service, or say SAP. So SAP can be a part of a community cloud, because there could be a lot of other play involved which are stored as a part of a offering within a cloud. So that's and it could be open to the entire community. So that's where it gets its term from, gets its term, that is the community cloud. The fourth, it is also, although it is mentioned it's a outsourced private cloud, but then it still is a private cloud. So private cloud service that is outsourced to a cloud provider is a outsourced service. So say for example, if I have my data center which is hosted with say something like a Netmagic or something like a TCL, right? So a Tata Communications Limited hosts my private cloud with them, or if my private cloud is hosted with, as I said, Netmagic is again a company which offers private cloud, or a Control-S is again a vendor which provides play for which I can actually host my infrastructure. So that becomes my hosted private cloud. So it's basically a third party vendor who is hosting my specific workload. So it's a private cloud service that has been outsourced to a cloud service provider. While aspects such as infrastructure requirements are determined by a contract, the key issue is security. So security, as we say, it's a common thread when we talk about cloud deployments. The private cloud has on-premise security that is implemented by a cloud provider, and there is one that is deployed by the consumer themselves as well. So imagine if I have my workloads, my entire data center is with a third party, right? So the third party might have some perimeter tools deployed so as to prevent a attack coming from outside, but as a consumer I could also have some other tools to protect my particular environment. The fourth type is the hybrid cloud. So the hybrid cloud is basically a combination of both the public and the private. So imagine a company who has some critical workloads which it keeps it as a private cloud, and then there are certain non-business critical applications. So say something like a leave management, something like a HRMS, attendance management system, which is not so very key, it could host it in a public cloud. So from an organization perspective, it leverages the private cloud, and it could be hosted with a third party or it could be on-premise, and it has certain workloads which are on the public cloud. So from organization perspective, it has a hybrid cloud strategy because it is utilizing both the public as well as the private cloud. So having looked at the different deployment methods, so again these are four: public cloud, private cloud, hybrid, and the community cloud. We saw the different essential elements in case of the cloud infrastructure. Now let us spend some time to understand which are the different service models in case of the cloud deployment. So the cloud computing service is a utility based model, maybe a software as a service, or offering everything like say the infrastructure, the storage, the hardware, everything. So it's termed as infrastructure as a service, or providing a platform where you get the operating system and the tools. It offers, say for example, API integrations. So it provides PaaS or platform as a service. So these are the three different service models that cloud has. The software may be hosted anywhere in the cloud as per the provider's choice, and the customer just goes by pay as you grow usage. So it's again usage centric approach in case of the SaaS model. So the main difference between the old application service provider model and the SaaS is that the ASP just hosts and charges you, whereas SaaS it provides the entire software and the proper platform, and actually it meters the entire usage. So again, I gave you the example of Salesforce.com, right? So you could actually measure how many users have logged in, logged out, how many licenses have been consumed, vis-a-vis the ASP model where it's basically open model, right? So you do not have any reporting or monitoring mechanism as such. So in case of the SaaS, you do not have to worry about what are your compute resources, what is the CPU utilization, what is the storage that is needed, etc., etc., etc. In a SaaS model, everything is given to you as a service. You do not have to worry about the underlying infrastructure as such.